scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla in a circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get things going on this Tuesday, February 25th. Flames Talk underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. We got a busy hour ahead, and it's a Tuesday, so let's get things going. From our Groundworks downtown studio, it's time to check in with our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli, as he joins us every Tuesday here on Flames Talk. And he joins us brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. Mr. Saravalli, happy Tuesday. How are you on this lovely day today?
I'm better now that I'm talking to you.
That's what I like to hear. Vice versa, pal. Vice versa. Hey, here we are 10 days away from the trade deadline, and you know, you and I on Tuesdays have been talking about different Flames things all season, and last week we dove in again on the deadline approach, and you referenced your conversation with Craig Conroy recently, and I think that you've made it very clear, and I think it's really, really easy to kind of break down what the Flames are looking for when it comes to the deadline. If they can find another deal where they find a player in their age range, similar to the Philadelphia deal, if they can make a deal like that, then sure, have at it. But otherwise, not going to be chasing big fish rentals or anything like that. But Frankie, could you see them making more of a tinkering move for an expiring contract, somebody that is not going to cost them as much as perhaps it would for one of the bigger names? Could you see them adding a seventh or sixth defenseman or another fourth line center or something like that?
I could. And in fact, I think it's in some ways becoming a bit of a buyer's market. We're 10 days out. We have not seen a lot of the rental pieces move just yet. Not to say that they won't between now and next Friday at 1 p.m. Mountain Time, but in the end, if we're looking at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 12:30 Mountain Time on Friday, March 7th, and some of these names are still on the board and might be going for pennies on the dollar, teams looking to ship guys off their books, a team like the Flames may be looking for a missing piece to try and not put them over the top, but help solidify their position in the standings and give them a chance to compete. Yeah, I could for sure see the Flames and Craig Conroy just checking off players on the list saying, oh, okay, this guy's still available. It's so late. Let me just give a ring and see, hey, what's it going to take to make something like this happen?
Yeah.
But they're not going to be trading significant future assets to do it.
And I think in this market, the big areas would be a right shot fourth line center. They're in desperate need of a right shot center iceman to help on the faceoff dot. And I think there's some intriguing options out there that they could potentially be looking at, and maybe another left shot defenseman. But, you know, again, outside of it being like a 23, 24 year old that they can have for a longer term, I would suggest that it would be kind of one of those tinkering moves that they'd be after. And so you're kind of the opinion that the prices may not be high for some of those, as high for some of those things as maybe they would be other years, hey?
I think so. I mean, That's at least the market intel I would be, you know, gathering at this exact moment in time. Again, don't know how it's going to shift in the next 3 days or let alone a week from now, but I think they're certainly going to be monitoring it, I think is the fairest and cleanest way to say it.
Okay, let me ask you this. We talked about this on Monday's
program. And by the way, good luck on the right shooting center thing.
I know.
The Flames are only one of like 17 teams in search of one.
Yeah, I know. Guys like Ty Dellandrea and Sam Lafferty and Luke Kunin, like those guys are going to be very highly sought after, you'd think.
Well, it's funny because so few of the guys you just mentioned are even on my board. you know, then you look at Michael McCarron in Nashville, or like go through the list, like there's always some intriguing pieces that maybe as a non-rental too, 1 year left at a league min kind of deal that gets you excited as well.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. We talked about this on Monday's program. You know, I think there's a decent chance that the Flames will, if Mikko Rantanen makes it to free agency, the Flames will put a really competitive offer on the table. I think that that's a guy that they would put some big bucks on the table for if he made it to unrestricted free agency. But that's if he gets to UFA. But there's been lots of buzz about him potentially moving before the deadline. Does it make a lick of sense for them to take a run at him before March 7th if Carolina is indeed looking at moving him?
I mean, anytime you can get your hands on a difference maker, I think you have to at least try. That said, I don't know how compatible the Flames and Canes would be in terms of making a trade like that.
Yeah.
It's the same conundrum that we've gotten to with
Dylan Cousins.
Pick another guy on the list. And then the next part is, would Mikko Rantanen want to sign in Calgary? And that part I would have not doubt about, but
for sure.
You'd have to, I mean, it's a real question to ask. So it's not like the Flames could afford to give up real assets to have him walk at the end of the season anyway, which is part of the trepidation that I think a lot of other teams are going to have if the Canes get to a spot where they decide, okay, we've gotten a non-committal answer, not a no, but a non-committal answer from Mikko Rantanen. Do we have to, you know, do we have to make a move here? Can we rent him for the rest of the year and just, you know, have him walk to free agency? Are we okay with that? And then if you're shopping him, the teams are going to ask that exact question is, okay, so if Carolina has put a significant deal on the table, and everyone I think is in agreement that that's been the case, why would we get a different result?
Yeah.
Is what teams would have to ask themselves.
Yeah. 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 And I guess in the larger picture, taking Calgary out of it, what is your read on this Rantanen situation and what his future immediate future in the next 10 days might look like here?
It's hard to say because I think that's exactly what the Canes are trying to decipher, right? Like, are we comfortable having this be Jake Guentzel 2.0 if it repeats itself? A guy who was a good fit that we acquired that we then have to go through a playoff run and seems like everything could work out. We make our offer and in the end he chooses to go somewhere else. Are we okay if that's all we get from trading Marty Natchez and Jack Drury and a second? Fair question to ask.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what the Canes are trying to decipher right now.
Is Rantanen's, from what you understand, is Rantanen's hesitancy to sign on the dotted line in Carolina just because he's so stunned at the fact that it ended up in a trade and that Colorado actually moved on? Is that kind of the driving force here?
I don't think it's necessarily that. I think it's, his world's been flipped upside down for sure. But it's one thing to have that happen, and it's another thing to have 3 weeks or a month later, more or less be put in this position, which is, hey, sign here for the next 8 years. And yeah, the pile of money is great, but the truth is he's going to get that anywhere. And whether it's 7 years or 8 years and it's $100 million or $113 million or whatever it ends up coming out to, he's going to be a very, very wealthy individual. But it's tough to make a call like that. I like it here. It seems okay. I've got a Finnish running mate in Sebastian Aho. Like, all these things are intriguing, but it's not necessarily the same as, do I want to sign up for the next 8 years and have to make a decision in a few weeks' time? So I think part of it is just I'd like to just buy some time. If you're in the Rantanen camp, it's like, we're not telling you no. We're just not sure. And it's not because we don't like you or because we don't think it could be a good fit. It's just that we don't really know what we want to do right now.
Man, you're right. I mean, after Gensel and they weren't able to come to terms there and they gave up a lot to bring him in to do that again and potentially lose Rantanen. And I get, like, there's a large risk factor here for Carolina if they decide to keep him without a contract past the trade deadline. I do not envy the situation that that management group finds themselves in, that's for sure.
I think it's okay. It's a good place to be in, I think. Like, here's the thing. You pulled off a trade for one of the hardest players in the league to get your hands on. It's, by all accounts, you know, since Joe Thornton, the most significant in-season trade in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And you've done that. You've pulled it off. And you've got optionality now. Either you've got a game-breaker for the first time in a playoff run, regardless of what happens in the future, maybe you somehow win a cup this year and this is the year you break through. Or you can now flip him and get back what you paid, maybe even a little more, or maybe even a better fit for your team, all because you decided to be aggressive. And I think maybe the best part through the end of this is, and I don't know that enough people have fully considered this part of it, Marty Natchez wasn't long for Carolina. Regardless of how well he played to start this year and how well he's played in Carolina, in Colorado, he is making six and change. Is only on a 2-year deal, so up for an extension as soon as this summer, and then a pending UFA, and due probably something in the $9+ million range. Where are the Canes really going to pay him that? I have real doubt. And in trading for Gensel and Natchez, or Gensel and Rantanen, excuse me, you didn't give up a first-round pick in either trade, and you didn't give up any of your top five prospects. So are they really in an unenviable position, or are they in a great spot?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair way of putting it. I mean, you'd love to, being in this market, you'd love to be in a situation where you could be a perennial cup contender like the Canes and be in a situation where you could go 2 years in a row and feel like acquiring that type of impact player was going to help you win a Stanley Cup. That's a very fair piece of perspective, Mr. Saravalli.
I would say that my motto, just in general, and I think the Canes subscribe to this, would be, if you're scared, get a dog. And The Canes aren't scared. And I think it's a tough way to go through life building a hockey team or being a GM if you're constantly worried about, oh my God, I don't know what's going to happen. What could you imagine if the worst case scenario happens? Just do it and figure it out after the fact. Trust your gut, your instincts, your scouting, all those things, and let the rest be what it is.
He's Frank Saravalli, our NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk, and with 10 days to go until the trade deadline, we got a boatload to go to get into. We talked about Rantanen, and we talked about the Flames. Let's move to the team that Calgary is chasing right now in this playoff race, a point back with a game in hand on Vancouver for the final Western Conference playoff spot. We've talked a lot about JT Miller. That move's been done. We will. I'll ask you about Elias Pettersson in a second, but one guy we have not talked a ton about is Brock Besser, and they've got 10 days, it sounds like, to make a decision on Besser's future with the group. And what's your read on how this might play itself out?
Well, I think they're really patient, and I think the Besser camp is as well. There's been no angst or animosity or fear. The Besser camp understands that he's missed 7 games this year and is on track to still finish with 28 goals, which is above his career average. It's not the 40 that he scored last year, but he was already making 6.65 before the 40-goal season. So he's due for a raise with the cap going up, and I would argue that the middle-class player like a Besser is one of those guys that's in line for, like, what you're going to see with the cap increasing is a regrowth or redistribution of wealth to help the middle-class player. because those are the guys that were hammered the most with the cap being flat. You either had the super duper stars making major dough and the lower guys, you know, the minimum wage, $1 million, $1.5 million, $2 million, those guys were fine. It was the guys right in the middle that were crushed and were forced in a lot of situations to take less. So I think he's going to be just fine. And I'll say this, would it surprise me at all if the Canucks didn't have a new deal in place and didn't trade him before the deadline? It would not. I think this is something that could linger. I think they're comfortable re-signing him. I think he's comfortable staying. And I still think there's a real possibility that he re-signs.
Okay. What about Elias Pettersson? Is there anything that gets decided between now and the trade deadline, or is his ultimate fate in Vancouver more likely to be figured out in the offseason?
I mean, it certainly feels more likely in the offseason. Okay. It'd be just from a pure cap perspective alone, like assuming that they're not retaining money, how many teams are taking on $11.6 million? I mean, you'd have to be trading bad contracts back, and then all of a sudden Vancouver is getting into a spot where they're saying, hey, is this worth it? It feels unlikely. That, you know, that said, though, the conversation in terms of determining his fate, I think largely will be written over these next few weeks, because I've said it, and I don't know a more clear way to say it than this. Part of what the Canucks are going to have to weigh is, yes, it would be very painful to give up on a 40-goal, 100-plus point center who's highly skilled at his lowest value and get peanuts and or nothing in return. But on the other side of the scale is, what happens if we're stuck with this guy that's making 11.6 for the next 7 years and, oh, by the way, gains full no-trade clause leverage? Are we in a worse position if that's the case? That's what they're going to have to measure. And based on what we've seen this season, and frankly, what we've seen over the last 14 months, it's difficult to come to any sort of conclusion other than that this game, his game is lost somewhere. I don't know how he finds it, if he needs to tap into Ilya Bryzgalov and the iPhone compass or what it is, but it's not readily findable. Find my iPhone, whatever he needs. He's got to search for it.
Yep. What went into Anaheim's decision to acquire Ville Husso from Detroit on Monday? I know you've got some insight on what the Ducks are thinking there.
Yeah. So a lot of people tried to immediately connect two different dots. One was that the Detroit Red Wings are clearing out cap space so that they can go out and make moves. Now, I don't have any doubt that Steve Yzerman's working on something, but they already have $14 million in cap space. In fact, Andrew Kopp being out for the rest of the year, which they announced today, they can't put him on LTIR and gain more cap space until they spend all $14 million first. That's how it works.
Right.
You only get LTIR if you don't have cap space. So they don't need additional cap space. Really, this was about, from an Anaheim perspective, in the AHL, Cali Klang is out month to month, and the only other goalie that they have that has experience there is Oscar Dansk. And they, in a lost season for the Ducks, they want to make sure that they get in the playoffs in the AHL. And they're willing to spend to do it. And people say, oh, well, how come they're taking on $3.5 million, you know? Well, it's also not how it works. It's less than $1.3 million in real cash, and that's essentially what they're looking at.
Yeah, and I found that really interesting seeing you break that down as the deal was getting brought to light on Monday. So that's interesting to watch going forward. You wrote over a Daily Faceoff about Boston's Trent Frederick on this Tuesday. What makes him such an attractive potential addition for another team?
Well, he can be a pain in the arse to play against. He's got size. He can score in front of the net. Last year had a great season, 18 goals and 40 points. He makes $2.3 million on the cap and is a pending UFA. He has energy that he brings. There is some inconsistency, and, you know, he's seen mostly as a third-line center, but, you know, could be pigeonholed as a winger, depending on how you want to look at it. Not a perfect player by any stretch of the imagination, but a guy that, coming off that 18-goal, 40-point season, wants a pretty significant raise. And his production has dipped, mostly because everyone in Boston has dipped this year as their offense has blown up. But the Bruins aren't willing to pay more, and he thinks he can get more on the market. So this is his opportunity to get a trade and go somewhere and do something in the playoffs. He had 3 goals in the first round against the Leafs last year in the postseason. And, you know, when you take a look at it, shouldn't cost you too much. I had it pegged as a second round pick, a late second round pick, that a team could boost themselves in down the middle, whether it's third or fourth line center, and put themselves in a spot to be just a little bit more competitive.
Your latest trade board is out. You've got 40 on your trade targets list as we move towards the final week and a half before the deadline. What? Anybody else on that board that you're really interested in? Anybody else on that board that really jumps off the page that we could see between that you've really got your eye on between now and next Friday?
Oh, man. Well, there's 40 names on the board. I'm real curious about the guys that are non-rentals. Like, what happens with Scott Laughton and Rasmus Ristolainen? Seth Jones? Bowen Byram is under team control. Carson Soucy has 1 year left. Ricard Raquel, 3 years left. Oliver Bjorkstrand, 1 year left. Like, if you wanted to be in the non-rental market, and you're probably looking at giving up the same assets for rental or non-rental, like that part has kind of been proven, this might be a good year to grab one of those non-rental guys and plug him in and see if it works. And if not, again, use the summer to flip him.
Yeah, I like that. See, I put you right on the spot, and you didn't miss a beat. That's because you were a true pro, Mr. Saravalli. Frank Saravalli's with us, Daily Faceoff NHL Insider. Let's wrap by just kind of wrapping up the Four Nations Faceoff. We're a little less than a week removed from the epic gold medal game between Canada and the United States in Boston. Of course, Connor McDavid scores the overtime winner. You were in attendance for every single game of the event. We talked about it leading into the gold medal game and what it all meant and how successful the first ever and only Four Nations Faceoff has been. And then you add on top of that, pal, another showdown between these two hockey giants. Knowing that the game Thursday went the way that it did, just how do you sum up the entire Four Nations Faceoff that we saw over the course of a little more than a week?
Electric, epic. Wish it was US-Canada in a 7-game series, as opposed to, no offense to those other two proud hockey countries, just didn't have the same juice. Long overdue. The fact that we went 11 years between that is a huge indictment on the people running both the NHL and the NHLPA, but they got it right, and no sense crying about that now, because better to have it than to not have had it at all. And I think we're looking at a situation that is going to be a hit moving forward. It's not going to be this quite the same, because this was a lot of pent-up interest, and doing it Olympics and then World Cup every 2 years is going to bring some normalcy to it. But I think what you can look forward to is Canada and the U.S., even the most staunch Canadian flag-waving supporter would have to agree with me saying that moving forward, this is a true coin flip. Will we see those scales tip at some point based on the cyclical nature of hockey? Sure. But the U.S. is better positioned, and why I said the game last Thursday was the biggest hockey game played on American soil since 1980 is, with all due respect to the 2002 Olympic team, that program wasn't ready to take the mantle from Canada. Mm-hmm. And this one quite obviously isn't either, but they're way closer and it's as narrow a margin as you can imagine.
Yeah. It's look, I obviously wanted to see Canada come out on top, but over the last decade, what that U.S. National Development Team program has done has closed the gap more than I think anybody ever could have seen in terms of the high-end talent between the Americans and the rest of the hockey superpowers. I mean, you take a look at all the players.
It's a numbers game at some point too, right?
Yeah.
Like the U.S., just from a pure population standpoint, having 10
times
the population,
right?
They're going to churn out at some point more players by quantity. Canada still has a huge edge in it being the national sport that you're getting the very best athletes more often than not playing hockey. In the U.S., we're still at 2% or 1% of the very best athletes choose to play hockey. If the game continues to grow, you could see those numbers tip, but you're also still dealing with an embarrassment of riches that Canada has to deal from in top end talent that the U.S. also still hasn't gotten to that level yet.
Last one on the Four Nations, and then we'll let you go. Does this make a meaningful dent in the NHL and hockey's place in the American sporting psyche, and you being south of the border, you'd have the best read on this. Like, how much does what we saw in the Four Nations face-off end up helping grow the sport in the United States?
Not as much as you would think.
Yeah.
For one, the U.S. needed to win. Two, the television ratings from the last few days would tell you that we didn't see a meaningful bump. You're back into NHL regular season hockey, which just isn't the same, and it can't possibly be the same. Players can't play like that over an 82-game regular season. So I think there's still a ton of work to be done. You've got new casuals that have been hooked and gotten into the boat. Now you got to keep them there, and that's hard work, and that's what's left in front of the NHL and NHLPA.
Yep. Great stuff, Frankie. Great to catch up with you. As always, we'll check in with you later this week on the big show, and we'll chat again on Flames Talk next week, just days before the trade deadline. Your eternal sleep is almost here once the deadline is done, right?
Cannot wait.
Be well, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
See you, Pat.
That's Frank Saravalli. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays on Flames Talk. He joins us to kick off this hour, and he joins us brought to you, as always, by our friends at South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
It is a Tuesday edition of Flames Talk, and it is time now for our Tuesday Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com with us this hour. Hi, Vicks.
Hey, buddy.
And now we say hello to Derek Wills, the voice of the Flames, to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. And I know that pretty much everybody expected Dustin Wolf to get the start Tuesday night to kick off a six-game road trip against Washington. That is not going to be the case. Dan Vladar gets the start against the Capitals. Head coach Ryan Huska saying in Washington on this Tuesday morning that they've got a lot of games coming up and they need both goaltenders to play. So knowing that, knowing what we've heard, and knowing that it is Vladar going up against the number one team in the NHL, what was our reaction? What is our reaction, gentlemen?
I was, like everybody else at Capital One Arena this morning, surprised
to learn that Dustin Wolf was not going to get the start. He has clearly become this team's number one goaltender. He's been a workhorse for the Flames, starting 20 of the last 26 games. And you know, I just assumed that after he played a good game against the Sharks on Sunday in the first game following the Four Nations break, that he'd go up against the top team in the Eastern Conference in the Capitals tonight. But then I looked and saw that he was not in the starter's net. He was down at the other end of the ice. So, you know, I asked the people that were sitting around me, and all of them just assumed Wolf was getting the start like I did. And then I did a little bit of digging and went and asked, I'll call him a source, if I should read into Dan Vladar being in the starter's net. And I was given a nod. So that's when we learned that Dan Vladar was going to get the start against the Caps. And the more I've thought about it today, guys, the more sense it makes to me. So both guys have played against the Capitals. Dustin Wolf is 0-2. Dan Vladar is 2-2. Now, Wolf's numbers are bad, and Vladar's numbers are worse as far as goals against average and save percentage against this team. But Vladar does have a couple of wins in his career versus the Caps. And this is a Capitals team that has been on an absolute heater. They have scored 15 goals in the two games since their Four Nations break came to an end, 8-3 and 7-3 victories over the Penguins and the Oilers, respectively. They've got an 8-game point streak. They have one regulation loss in their last 21 games. They've got a 16-game home point streak. And this is a team that has been filling their opponent's net. The Capitals, the Flames, we've talked a lot about how good they've been when they've scored four goals, but the fact that they have had trouble getting to four, they've only done it 10 times in 56 games this season. Just to put things in perspective, guys, the Capitals have scored four or more goals in seven straight games. I think the Flames have done a fantastic job protecting their rookie goaltender in Dustin Wolf this season, whether it be giving Dan Vladar the second half of every single back-to-back, and I would assume he'll get the second half of the one back-to-back on this trip against the Hurricanes coming up on the weekend. But putting Dustin Wolf in there against this Capitals squad with the way they're playing right now might not be the best thing for that 23-year-old goaltender in his first season as a full-time NHLer. So I think part of it is protecting him. Guys, I think the other part of it is, yeah, you can't play Dustin Wolf in every single one of the final 27 games in 54 days to end the regular season. Dan Vladar is going to have to get some starts. Played well in his last start way back when on February 2nd when he was really good in the final two periods of that 3-2 victory over the Kraken in Seattle. He's going to need some starts. So, you know, it's been a few weeks since he's played. Get him in there. Get him a game. I wouldn't say this is a scheduled loss, but maybe pretty close to it. And if you find a way to pick up a point or two in Washington tonight, that's good for Vladar and that's good for the Flames. And hey, maybe big picture, it's good for Wolf as well.
Listen, I was very surprised when reports from you, Willsy, came out this morning about Vladar being in the starter's net and that he was going to get this game against the Washington Capitals. When we, Pat and I, tossed around, how would you do the goalie splits on Flames Talk on Monday? I did say 5-1, but I also had written down, well, maybe you go 4-2, but I never brought that up because the more that we talked about it, the more I was like, no, you got to go 5-1. And we're not even, a week removed from Ryan Huska saying he was willing to start Wolf 15 straight if they needed to, because points are the ultimate thing the Flames need right now in this wild card chase with the Vancouver Canucks, St. Louis Blues, Utah Hockey Club. And for all the reasons you mentioned about the Washington Capitals with their home point streak, goals, four more goals in however many games straight, and just the sheer demolishing of Pittsburgh and Edmonton coming out of the Four Nations break. To me, that's why you would need Wolf in this game. You need points first and foremost, and Wolf is your best choice in terms of being able to at least slow what is a juggernaut of a Washington Capitals offense right now. And the fact you mentioned, Willsy, Wolf has started 20 of 26 since December 14th. Only two goalies in the NHL, Mackenzie Blackwood and Andrei Vasilevskiy, have started more over that stretch. I think the Flames have removed themselves from spot starting Wolf, from shielding him away from competition based on workload alone. So to be completely honest, I was very surprised that this was going to be a Vladar game. I very much thought we were going to see five starts for Dustin Wolf on this 6-game road trip. That's almost certainly not going to be the case now with the back-to-backs coming up. Carolina being the second of back-to-backs on the tail end of the weekend. I'm very surprised at this decision. I won't lie.
I mean, no, guys, I was talking on Monday. I said Vladar is going to start against Washington. You just wait. Go check the tape. No, obviously not. I was as surprised as anything when I saw that as well. But, you know, listening to Ryan Huska, checking in with a couple of people as well, the message is pretty clear, guys. The message is both guys still need to play. And I think maybe the largest thing, and I'm not suggesting that you have to agree with this logic or not, but I think the largest thing that I think might have played into this is if they don't play Vladar at some point before the weekend, it would be exactly 1 month between starts, February 2nd to March 2nd. And I, honestly, I think that is as much of the conversation as anything. And I know that it's like, well, you're the backup. You play when the number one's not ready to go. I get that conventional thinking. But, you know, for a team that did play the entire first half of the season with a tandem, and only in the second half of the season have they really started to move towards Wolf being the guy, the more that I have talked to people that I trust with the team and listening to Ryan Huska on Tuesday morning, it's like, okay, I can kind of understand that. And if they wanted to choose one time to do it, maybe this is the right time to start off the road trip against the number one overall team that's going to be a handful to begin with. So, look, I'm surprised by it, and I was not expecting it. I'm like Vickers was. I was expecting 5 starts for Wolf, 1 start for Vladar. But I think that is what the Flames are aiming at more than anything else, is that they still need to play both goalies, even if one is going to play a little, or in this case, I think a lot more than the other. It's still almost certainly going to be 4-2 when it's all said and done on this road trip. So I think that's what the Flames are aiming at here. And just know, I wonder, like, if there wasn't a 2-week break and the Flames hadn't just gotten back into action and played their first game in 15, 16 days on Sunday, I don't think we'd be having this conversation. But I think the fact that February 2nd was the last time Vladar started and March 2nd is the next time there's kind of that obvious place for him, I think that's the biggest reason why we're seeing this on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I guess the question for me is, can Dan Vladar be the better of the two goaltenders tonight? And, you know, on the surface, that seems like it's a tall task, because you're going up against a guy in Calgary native Logan Thompson, who you could argue has been one of the best goaltenders in the NHL this season. You know, 4th in wins and in goals against average, tied for 2nd in save percentage. He's got a 16-game point streak. His last regulation loss was on December 17th versus the Blackhawks, believe it or not. But he has given up 4 or more goals in 2 of the last 4 games. He's given up 3 or more goals in 4 straight. And that was after he, you know, only gave up 4 or more goals in 4 of his first 28 games this season. So, you know, they've been a little bit leaky defensively in front of him, and they've outscored those issues with, like I said, 15 goals in their last 2 games and 4 more goals in each of their last 7 contests. So we'll see. We'll see if Dan Vladar can outduel Logan Thompson, who will celebrate his 28th birthday today. And if he does that, then I think he gives the Flames a chance to win the hockey game. But, you know, one thing is for absolute sure. The Flames are going to have to be a lot better in front of Dan Vladar tonight than they were in front of Dustin Wolf on Sunday night.
This was Ryan Huska. This comes via Eric Francis. Ryan Huska 3 days ago, this quote: "We're at a point where we need to find a way to get as many points as we can. And if that means we're going to play Dustin 15 in a row because he's having success, so be it." That was prior to a .931 save percentage versus San Jose. To me, the decision to start Vladar somewhat flies in the face of that quote.
Yeah, I'm definitely it. If you're going to take that quote as full on gospel, for sure it does. And yet, I still think the fact that Vladar hasn't started since February 2nd is the biggest driving force behind this decision. Wills, you got one last thought, or do you want to move on to the next one?
Well, I can just tell you, I bumped into Dan at the hotel here a little while ago. He's got a big smile on his face. He's excited to play tonight. I know it's a big challenge for him, going up against the best team in the Eastern Conference and, you know, one of the best goals for and goals against teams in the National Hockey League. But what an opportunity for Dan Vladar. If he plays well in this game against the Capitals, that I think it puts him in a position to earn some more starts moving forward.
Yeah. It's our Daily Flames roundtable. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg. So, and Vix and I talked about this on Monday's show, but I think it's worth revisiting. This game Tuesday in Washington kicks off the mother of all six-game road trips. It is a gauntlet the Flames are going to face between now and next Thursday when it wraps up in Dallas. So knowing that they've got five playoff teams and five heavy hitters, plus an interesting night in Philadelphia, gents, what in your eyes makes this a successful trip? For the Flames to get on that flight Friday morning back to Calgary, what needs to happen? What results do we need to see for this, in your mind, to be deemed a successful trip?
What did Daryl Sutter used to say? When you go on a road trip, you want to come home with as many points as games played?
More points than games played.
More points. Well, on this trip, because it's such a gauntlet and because you're playing three of the last five Stanley Cup champions, you're playing the defending champs, you're playing perennial Stanley Cup contenders. I wouldn't call the Capitals one of them, but they are leading the Western Conference in second overall this season. But you've got the Lightning, you've got the Panthers, you've got the Hurricanes, and then you've got a game against the Flyers, the one non-playoff team of the group, and then another game against a contender in the Stars. If the Flames could finish this trip 500, whatever that looks like, six of a possible 12 points, then I think that puts them in a position when they return home. And I wouldn't say the schedule lightens up because, again, Sunday was the start of a stretch of 27 games and 54 days to wrap up the regular season. But you know, this is probably the toughest stretch on paper the Flames have all season. So if they could pick up six of a possible 12 points, I think they're going to be in a pretty good spot coming home because they've got a game in hand on Vancouver. They'll use that game in hand and could leapfrog the Canucks in the standings in the fight for that final wild card spot in the Western Conference with a win tonight. So you get 6 of 12, and then you take a look at the seven games following the Four Nations break. That would mean that you picked up eight of a possible 14 points during that stretch. I think that's kind of bare minimum of what the Flames have to do if they want to be within striking distance of the Canucks with what looks like a pretty light schedule for that team in the next handful of games.
Yeah, I'll agree with that 500 points percentage sort of being the benchmark of what's successful. Would you like to come away with more? Absolutely. But you ran through the gauntlet of, and gauntlet is the perfect word for it. You run through the gauntlet of the teams that they're going to play. If you can come away with a 3-3-0 record or 2-2-2, I think you're very satisfied. The other wrinkle I'll add, just to be a little different, Willsy, is whatever you have to do to still be within 1 point or even be ahead of the Vancouver Canucks, who will play five games over that same stretch, I'd be satisfied with from a Flames perspective. The Canucks have the Kings, Ducks, Kraken, Ducks again, and Wild. So not exactly the same sort of test that the Flames will face on this road trip as the Canucks, but if you can find a way to still be within 1 point or right in that mix for that second wild card, that means you've at least survived the road trip for me.
I still think 7 out of a possible 12 points is what I would deem a success. I would say 5 or 6 points would be passable. But if I'm going to say, hey, it's a successful road trip, I still think you got to be above 500. That's 3-2-1 would be the record you'd need to get 7 points on this trip. And I know that we're all grading on a curve here because of how difficult this test is. I get that, how difficult this trip is. I really do understand that. But to be a playoff team, you've got to still win more games than you lose down the stretch. And honestly, for the Flames to make the playoffs based on what probably is going to be the cutoff to be in, like, you're probably looking at anywhere between 93 to 95 points, and essentially the Flames have got to go 10 games above 500 to get to that stage between now and the end of the season in their final 26. So I know that it's a tough six-game stretch, but they still got to find a way to be above 500 during this six-game stretch. And, you know, I feel like if they're not, they might be in a spot where they lose some ground. So that's why I say 7 points to me is what makes it a successful trip. And that's probably, guys, because I'm looking at it maybe from the larger chase for the playoff picture and less about just the six. But that's probably how I'd answer it, guys.
Do you think they have to go 10 games above 500?
I think 16 wins is probably what you're looking at. 15, 16 wins in the final stretch. Now, all of a sudden, loser points and overtime losses, shootout losses play into that. So somewhere in the range of 30 to 32 points is what they're going to need, though. Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be probably 5 or 6 games above.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, that's not 10 games above 500. That would be if it's just strict wins and losses. But yeah, games played, it'd be like 6 games above 500 is probably what you need to be between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, if they could go, let's just keep it simple, 16 and 10, which, you know, that would be a really strong finish to the season.
I don't know why I thought that was 10 games above 500. There's that. No, because sorry, math. There's that just, Steinberg math.
I was just trying to be clear.
No, I'm glad you did. Yeah. It's always good to correct Steinberg math.
Yeah, so if you go 16 and 10, you add 32 points to the 62 that you already have, and that gets you to 94. You can get the 94. I like your chances.
That's probably the cutoff. Like right now, if the teams were to continue on with the winning or points percentages they're at, I think it's kind of 92, 93, which would get you in. But
somebody's going to get hot.
Exactly. You have to expect, you know, let's take into account Vancouver maybe gets hot again. So I think 94, 95 is probably what you're talking about right now to be a playoff team when it's all said and done. And that probably gets you in by a point or two. Because also, I know that they're a little further back and have played more games, but Utah and St. Louis aren't completely out of this equation either. So I think 94 probably is safe. I'm with you on that front.
Yeah, and the big difference between this season and last season, the Flames were still points-wise within striking distance at this stage of the game last year. The problem was they had a bunch of teams between them and that final playoff spot. This year, there's one, and there's one point separating them from the Canucks. So the Flames, because of that, are in a much better position. Like you said, you know, some teams below them could go on a run and you know, get themselves back into the race, but I'm not necessarily expecting the Blues or the Utah Hockey Club to do that. So, you know, the bottom line is that the Flames take care of their business. They'll probably be a playoff team. You got a couple of head-to-heads coming up at home versus the Canucks. Those are going to be absolutely huge hockey games if this race stays close, which I expect it to. So somewhere along the way, you're going to have to win some games that on paper you probably shouldn't. So we'll see if they can slow down the high-flying Capitals tonight to keep Ovechkin off the scoreboard. I thought they did a good job against him in the first game between the two teams this season. And, man, this would be a massive upset if they could find a way to win this one. So, hoping for a good hockey game tonight, guys. Hey,
everything points to a Flames loss. The backup starting and Washington rolling and Thompson starting for the Caps against his hometown team. And everything points to
his birthday.
Everything points to a Flames loss, so might as well be a Flames win. That's kind of the way I look at it. If everything's pointing one way, why not go the other way? Thank you, Wilsey. We'll do the roundtable again on Wednesday following the Flames and Caps.
Okay, enjoy the game tonight, guys.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Cam Hughes and Shan Virgie, our outstanding producers. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.